Hey, good morning, everybody. My heart reaches out to you. These are days of such uncertainty. I feel like we're living together through a kind of collective vulnerability. Nobody really knows what's coming, and we don't really know where our safe harbor is. I think in this situation, it's natural to want to pause and wait to see what happens before making any big moves, and that's really a good idea. But there are many people now who are suffering because they don't have the option of waiting things out. They need to make decisions about things that they never imagined. I see their stories on the TV news, and I feel how hard things are for them. Thankfully, this is not my situation right now, but there is a decision that I have been thinking about making, and I've been feeling kind of unsettled about it. I've been going back and forth in my mind, and I'm not sure what to do. And in my mind's ear, I keep hearing Katagiri Roshi saying, "Whatever you think, still there is a question left behind. What shall I do?" Day after day, that question is the final question you have to face. Yes, exactly. So today I want to share some thoughts that have been coming up for me around decision making and life as a Buddhist. These are not thoughts about what ideals or values to choose, or how to keep a calm mind in a stressful situation. These are more like perspectives that you might take when looking at something. And I have three perspectives I want to say something about: dualism, choicelessness, and unity. The first perspective is that making decisions requires looking at life dualistically. Framing the pros and cons of something forces us to see things dualistically in terms of gain and loss. A dualistic point of view can never be completely satisfying, so there's always some kind of suffering there. When we struggle with a decision, it means we are aware that we have at least two options, and there is something of value in each option. You know that whichever one you choose, you will end up with less of what you want and more of what you don't. So making a decision requires you to limit your possibilities and to accept loss. Human beings naturally fear loss and value freedom over limitation. Add in fear of making a mistake and potential regret that you might experience, and the whole situation can be paralyzing or panic-inducing. But when you think about it, life is a series of "what shall I do?" questions. In a way, everything we do is based on making a choice. We act on our choices to do, to have, or to believe something in particular, and not something else. We don't agonize over the gain and loss in every situation because we have established habits that make many choices easy and efficient. We think in ways that allow us to avoid knowing that anything was lost at all. But then a more difficult situation comes up. All at once, we're in unfamiliar territory and we have to find a way out. It was a situation like that that brought me to Zen Center over 40 years ago. What I knew about how life works had turned out to be wildly irrelevant to the way my life was actually going. It was suffering and I didn't know what to do. It took me over a dozen years to figure that one out. And there have been many more since then. So how does Buddhism help? Dogen said that to study Buddhism is to study the self. And along the way, one way that I have studied myself was by examining the story that I tell myself about my life. As a result, I have reconstructed that story many, many times. Practicing Buddhism and studying Buddhist psychology in particular helps us learn to see ourselves very straightforwardly. Sometimes we don't like what we see. But all we have to do is just keep looking with compassion and a calm mind. Just by paying attention to everything, we start to see the patterns of our thought, the ways we fool ourselves into believing something or avoiding something. For me, every new version of my story came from getting horribly stuck and then learning something from it. The plot shifted often as I saw how my human mind works and the complex chains of cause and effect that were playing out over long periods of time. Interesting thing to me now is that the way I finally ended up with a version of the story that worked and made sense for me was to take full responsibility for all my choices and to accept the consequences of all my decisions. The surprise for me was that taking responsibility did not cause me more suffering. It gave me clarity and relief. It took me out of the fog of giving credit to myself and blaming others and let me step outside that and see the big picture of just what is. So now I know that when it comes to making a decision, knowing that you will allow everything to be seen, that you will not hide or look away from anything, is what makes it possible for you to trust yourself and to not fear having regret too much. Knowing that you are willing to take responsibility for whatever is caused by your decisions allows you to depend on yourself and deal with whatever happens. Still, whatever you decide, there's always uncertainty about the outcome. So we need a good dose of humility too. So those are three things, trusting yourself, depending on yourself, and humility, that are good allies when you try to figure out what to do. The second way that Buddhism shows up is by offering us choicelessness. Talking about the question, what shall I do? Katagiri Roshi said, Shakyamuni Buddha taught us how to approach this question. Instead of paying attention only to ideas, we also have to pay attention to the real state of our existence. We have to pay attention to the whole reality of human life. How? That is spiritual practice. In this context, I think spiritual practice lets me step outside of the active position of making a choice and lets me take up the passive position of non-action. The Tao Te Ching gave me some advice. Tao abides in non-action. Without desire, there is tranquility. The world is ruled by letting things take their course. I think this is a way of trusting in the creative activity of the universe and waiting patiently for something more to happen. I don't mean it as simple procrastination, although found that sometimes that works too. It's more like sitting silently in a wild place and waiting for the wild animals to forget that you're there and come out. Choicelessness means you can stop thinking about your question in terms of gain and loss and give yourself a time for not distinguishing anything. Letting go of dualistic ideas relieves my mind. It lets me relax, rest, and open to a deeper way of knowing, understanding what needs to be done. Letting my thoughts settle down creates a space where something can arise from deeper in my life. Something that I believe will give me support and assistance. So you can rest in not having a preference and accept things as they are while you wait. What are you waiting for? What are you hoping will appear? The choiceless choice. There may come a time when you discover that you are no longer thinking about making a choice because you have no doubt about what to do. There is only one option, because only one possible course of action makes any sense. You simply know what to do. That's what I'm waiting for. Another point about being patient with a question is to remember that the universe is constantly under construction, so your circumstances are always changing. Sometimes time goes by and you realize that the question that troubled you so much has completely disappeared, leaving you in peace. There is nothing left to be done. My third perspective is that we can seek and receive help from the oneness of life. I don't know if this point is really helpful. It certainly is not practical. But as Buddhists, when we are struggling with a what shall I do question, we want whatever decision we make to be an expression of our compassionate hearts. And we want to do it with a sense of unity with life. We want to make decisions that are right, not just for our human selves, but also in an interconnected cosmic self. In Buddhism, there are three ways we can receive help from that cosmic life. When we think about them, there is some overlap between them, but different terms are used to name them. First one is cosmic resonance. If you look back at your life, you may find that you've already had a taste of cosmic resonance. Something touched your life and left you with an intuition that there was something more to your life. Something that you could move toward or open up to that would help you feel more at home in the world. After studying Buddhism, you might think of this as wanting to know that your Buddha nature is being expressed in your own life and you can depend on it. Dogen saw the practice of Zazen as making an invitation to the infinite to be vividly present with us in cosmic resonance. He called it Bodhisattva, the mind of awakening. That mind resonates with the entire cosmos. For Dogen, the experience of cosmic resonance was our entrance to the Buddha's way. Another thing that's available is spiritual communion. Spiritual communion in Japanese is kano doko. It's a sublime sense of shared presence that occurs between you and other beings. You arouse your own sense of being alive and fully present, open your heart, and offer the energy of your life to another being and receive its response. Sometimes it goes the other way and you feel the energy of something that's reaching out to you and you naturally respond. That subtle two-way exchange lets you experience the beauty of life and the sense that life is worthwhile despite all its hardships. When you extend your energetic presence and receive another energetic presence in return, you sense what it means to say that your life is connected to other lives. Understand that whatever you decide for yourself, you're also deciding for all the beings that exist with you. You care deeply that they be happy. The third one is spiritual guidance. Similar to kano doko, there's a Chinese word meaning correlative resonance. And that word is ganying. It's based on the pulsating energy throughout the field of qi that infuses the cosmos and influences all interrelated things. In Chinese Buddhism, this is understood as the dynamic action of your prayers being heard. In Japanese Buddhism, there is the word miyoshi, which means the mysterious guidance or incomprehensible assistance that one may receive from a teacher, another person, or from life itself. If you practice here at MZMC, you have probably already requested this for yourself without perhaps knowing it, because after we recite the Heart Sutra, the Doan makes a dedication of merit on behalf of all of us, which includes such a request or prayer. It goes, we honor the boundless virtue of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. May their compassion embrace us. We prostrate ourselves before Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. May their wondrous power enter our hearts. There's a similar statement made in the Jijiyu Zamadhi chant, which comes from Dogen's Shobo Genzo Bendowa, and is recited in many Zen centers. In that chant, you call on the imperceptible mutual assistance of the enlightened ones, and are reassured that all persons receive the unperceived help of the Buddhas and their wonderful and incomprehensible teaching and guidance. Katagiri Roshi taught that we are always receiving help from Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and that Zen practice is an opportunity to invite the Buddhas into our life so that we can appreciate it and use it. Then what are we receiving? All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas made a vow to save all beings, including us. Their vow is an expression of their compassionate heart, and their compassion is still here. It's woven into the fabric of our universe. If we can understand that their compassion is universally available, we can invite it to appear in our life and receive the benefit of their guidance right now. Also, we can make such a vow ourselves and offer it to all beings, knowing that our compassion will always be there too. I don't know if holding an awareness of your life being interconnected with and supported by the cosmic scale of life can give you any direct help when you're trying to answer a question, what shall I do? But maybe it can give you a feeling that you have a safer ground to stand on while you're thinking about and debating the issue at hand. So I want to end with a story about a lesson that I received from feeding birds in my backyard. Maybe you can see the traces of the three perspectives I've been talking about: dualism, choicelessness, and unity. I love to watch birds anywhere. But for many years, I fed only hummingbirds. Hummingbird feeders are really easy to maintain, and there's no seed mess underneath them, which is important in my housing situation. But then I discovered that you can buy hullless birdseed. Doesn't make a mess. So I bought some. And after the hummingbirds left in the fall, I put up a feeder. It gave me the company of all kinds of wonderful birds for the whole winter. I had cardinals, chickadees, goldfinches that weren't colorful, and cute juncos pecking around on the ground underneath. But when the spring came, the grackles arrived. Grackles are big, scrappy birds, and there's not much about them that's endearing. They drove the other birds that I liked so much away and took over the feeders for themselves. Okay, so what should I do? Well, I took the feeder down. Serves those nasty grackles right. I showed them who's boss. When the spring arrived the next year, the grackles came back, but things didn't go the same way. I intended to take the feeder down, but I didn't get around to it right away. Then I noticed that there were mourning doves that were happily eating the seeds that the messy grackles had scattered on the ground. And I also noticed that when the grackles left for a while, all my old friends came back to the feeder as soon as the coast was clear. They were quite well equipped to coexist with the grackles. All I had to do to keep enjoying them was to accept the presence of the grackles. Since then, my feeder has stayed up all year round. And now that I don't think of the grackles as my enemy, they are just part of the bird crowd with their own unique behavior for me to observe. Plus, they have beautiful iridescent purple heads that shine in the sun, so I found a way to actually appreciate them. I think of this bird feeder as a spiritual mirror for me. I really enjoyed being a judge of what was right and wrong in the grackles' presence. But when I decided to take down the feeder, I left my bird friends without a good source of food, and I deprived myself of their company for many months. I used this lesson to remind myself that I should question whatever story my mind serves up. Relax myself, relax my mind, not worry so much, and imagine everything living in peace and harmony. Before I do anything else, I should imagine the world in peace and harmony. I think we are all hoping that the way society evolves from this traumatic time will be positive for humankind. So I'll close with something that Katagiri Roshi said in Each Moment is the Universe. He said, as one human being, if you want the human world as a whole to develop, you have to take responsibility and do something. Life is depending on you to act. What should you do? Open your heart, live mindfully, and start to walk with all beings. That way of walking is steadfast, tranquil, and positive. You share your life and practice benevolence, sympathy, and compassion. This is the practice of walking alone with an open heart. We are always creating history by the actions that we decide to take. All decisions are important. I'm hoping that your practice will guide and support you as you make yours. Thank you so much for being here, and I'm wishing you all the best.